Good morning, everybody. Representative Lornis, do you want to just start presenting, and then you can move your bill after we get a quorum, which we almost have, I think. And Ms. Grimes is going to, or Mr. Michikan is going to help with it. Okay. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and we'll move the bill, but there's also a delete all. We'll get to that when we are officially informed.
Right. I'm assuming you're working off your 0287 delete all, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
The House File 2087, and we'll go as fast as you want us to this morning.
As fast as you want to go, Representative Lornis.
Cover all the P's if you want, and the question mark.
Go ahead.
Well, what we have in front of us today is the bill, basically the higher education funding bill from the governor's office, affecting the Office of Higher Education, the University of Minnesota, and Minfield, and the Mayo Medical Foundation as well. And to begin walking through the bill, I guess that I could have Trish Grimes.
Welcome, Ms. Grimes.
Mr. Chair and members.
Maybe we should get the new director of the Office of Higher Education to come down and explain the bill. Mr. Metzen, would you like to?
You just want
that. Okay. Welcome.
He likes the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Trish Grimes from the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. The overall appropriation of the Office of Higher Education is $185 million each year for 2010 and 2011. Basically working from the Strike Everything Amendment, Amendment A090287. The first section in the bill is on the state grant program, the agency's largest program. The appropriation is $144 million each year for a total of $288 million for the biennium. And as we discussed in this committee previously, with increases in the federal Pell Grant program and the fact that the Pell Grant and the state grant together work together to meet students' needs for help in paying for higher education, the increase in the Pell Grants makes $60 million available to reinvest in the state grant program, and the governor is recommending that be reinvested by increasing the four-year tuition maximum by 7.5% each year, increasing the two-year tuition maximum, and increasing living and miscellaneous expense allowance by 6% each year. Now, Mr. Chairman, I might just mention the phrase tuition cap is used in two very different ways in this bill. The tuition maximums that we use to calculate the state grant awards get called a tuition cap. And there is also language elsewhere in the bill on the governor's preferences for limitations on increases in tuition at the University of Minnesota and MinSU, and that gets called a tuition cap. So I just want to try to be clear that there are two different, very different ways of using that same phrase. One program within the Office of Higher Education budget has an increase, that's interstate tuition reciprocity, with an increase of $1 million a year to fund the increasing number of Minnesota students who attend North Dakota schools. And there are two programs with no proposed budget cuts, the Safety Officers Survivors Grant and the Minnesota Minority Education Partnership. Then there are a set of programs that have, where the governor is recommending 5% cuts. Those are state work study, post-secondary child care grant, Minnesota American Indian Scholarship, the Midwest Higher Education Compact, and outreach for Get Ready and student and parent information. Programs with 10% budget cuts are Minitech, the Interest Library Loan Resource Sharing Program, the MinLink Gateway, library-related programs, the Learning Network of Minnesota, which helps provide bandwidth and servers and so forth to campuses in Minnesota, the Intervention for College Attendance Program grant, the United Family Medicine Residency Program, the Campus Compact, and Agency Administration. Then there are two programs that have larger reductions. The Minnesota College Savings Plan Matching Grant, the reduction is $320,000 each year in funds that are projected to be unspent. And the Achieve Scholarship Program, the reduction is $5.45 million in 2010 and $5.05 million in 2011 from the $10 million annual base, again from funds that are projected to be unspent. And the appropriation that remains for the Achieve Scholarship Program includes money for the governor's proposal to increase Achieve Scholarships by $150 each year for students who took online courses while in high school and otherwise qualified for the Achieve Scholarship.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, I'm Mark McCants with the Office of Education. I'll talk a little bit about the appropriation to the Minnesota system, the Board of Trustees there, and the Board of Regents at the University of Minnesota. In real summary form, what the governor did was, if you recall last time we were in, we talked about the federal stabilization money, and you asked about interpretations. And what you have in front of you is the administration's interpretation of the use of that money. What the governor did was take the general fund appropriation for both systems down to the 2006 level, which was required under the maintenance of effort in the federal law. And then under that law, the governor, the administration is required to bring spending up to the highest of 2008 or 2009 levels. The figure was 2008 for the two systems. So the governor then used the federal money to bring the spending to those two systems up to the 2008 level. So going forward into 2010 and 11, the money appropriated from both combination of the federal and state sources would be equal to the 2008 level. Mr. Grimes mentioned the question about the tuition cap for limitations. Language is on page 6 of the bill. For MinSU, line 6.10 to 6.14, and very similar language on the next page 7 for the Board of Regents at the University. And it's simply, it's not language that sets an absolute limitation or cap by any means, but encourages or directs the board, the respective board, to limit tuition to amounts to limit the impact of any reductions on students. So leave the decision process up to the boards where it probably rightfully belongs, but it says, you know, keep this in mind when you set the tuition increases over the next 2 years. As everybody, I think, knows, Mr. Chair, this is one-time money going for 10 and 11. So the base is established in the bills as well. Again, on page 6 for MinSU, line 618 to 620 established the base for the years 2012 and 2013. Likewise, at the University of Minnesota. These are numbers that are the same as the governor's original recommendation back in January. So it's as if those reductions in the original recommendation would have occurred. And again, there are continuing problems under the February forecast for the out years. I think I summarized what's in the bill for the two systems.
At this point, Representative Nornis, we have a quorum, so Representative Nornis moves the delete all amendments A09. Oh, I got to move the regular bill, don't I? Excuse me. We'll move, Representative Nornis moves House File 2087, be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion, and then Representative Nornis moves the delete all amendments labeled A09. All those in favor of that motion, just to get the bill in the governor's, the way the governor prefers. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And then, Representative Nornis, do you have another A1 amendment?
We have the A1 amendment. That's correct.
And do you want to explain it, or you just want us to put it on?
Well, it just clarifies, it deals with textbooks, and
Ms. Grimes?
Mr. Chairman, there were a couple of typos in the numbers in the bill that are corrected.
There seems to be a number of typos in the numbers, but I'm looking in 12 and 13. Are those typos?
And then, as it turned out, the language starting in line 1.6 on the textbook, we have talked to the students about this language, but we didn't draft it quite properly, thanks. Frankly, in the governor's bill, and we've had some help from House and Senate staff in drafting it so that it ends up in session law, because reports that are of a short time period belong in session law, not in permanent statutory law. the language would require the Office of Higher Education to develop an implementation strategy to help students get pricing information for textbooks. And like I said, the student organizations that had worked to support this language in the first place have worked with us on this amendment. In the statutory changes in the bill, I'm sorry, so do you want to stop and take the A1 amendment?
Yeah, we'll take the amendment then. Everybody knows what it is. All those in favor, then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. Okay, go ahead.
In Article 2 of the bill, Section 1 is the textbook language, which is just amended. Sections 2 and 3 have to do with technical change in the definition of Minnesota resident for tuition reciprocity. The definition that we had been using was cross-referenced to a part of statute that was repealed in 2005. And so it needs to be put back into place. And it just continues current practices. There's also language there that would allow students to appeal for resident status. Again, this is continued current practice. There are rare occasions when someone will move to Minnesota because of a spouse's job or for medical treatment or something like that, and may immediately start attending, for example, at River Falls and not realize that they were supposed to wait a year before attending on more than a half-time basis. And if they can document that they came to Minnesota for purposes other than higher education, the director of the office generally gives them a waiver and lets them be eligible for tuition reciprocity right away. Section 4, it has the additional, the language that would provide the additional amount for chief scholarship students to take online courses while in high school.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll speak to Section 5 and 6. These are two provisions that deal with regard our self-loan program, the bonds outstanding, or bonds that we would otherwise issue. It's commonly referred to as a moral obligation on the part of the state. And what it simply says is, should the occasion ever occur where we would fall short in our payments or our necessary revenue for debt service payments on the bonds, the governor would recommend to the legislature in his budget the necessary money to pay those bonds. We don't anticipate this ever being used because the coverage in our bond covenants are so high that we have so much money, both in our own capital fund and our asset coverage is so high. The reason it's before you is that both our investment bankers and the finance people we deal with at the banks and at the rating agencies suggest that if you had this in place, it actually helps the bond sell better, perhaps at a lower interest rate. And we deal with different people in the bank. Different buckets or different offices, you know, where there's actually more ability or capacity to help us sell bonds. A housing finance agency has this exact same language, and they've had it for a long time. So it's here based on recommendations that would help us sell bonds in the future, and I don't feel there's any issue with default ever occurring.
Any questions then, Representative Norris, for the witnesses regarding the governor's proposal? Any questions to Mr. Berg about differences between the House proposal and the governor's, which I don't think are much after the federal stimulus money gets put back in, other than I think we treat the Office of Higher Education a little kinder, at least I think. Go ahead, Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chairman, just I think most people who have been looking at this have seen it, but the House targets that came out 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, and were enacted in the Ways and Means Committee last week. Mr. Miscanis talked about the governor's view of how the fiscal stabilization funds have to be allocated under the Recovery Act. The House's targets assume the exact same methodology that the governor pursues under that, and so the House number for this committee for higher education for the fiscal stabilization fund is derived, the same numbers are derived from the same methodology that the governor uses, and I think there's pretty broad agreement amongst, we've had a few meetings on the technical folks at the House and the Senate and the Finance Department, that we all agree that that's how the Act says you have to do it. So that will essentially, on a one-time basis, prevent there being any cuts to the system budgets in 10 and 11. No, that said, there is a, Minsky would be slightly below base and the university wouldn't because of the 09 money, but the fiscal stabilization funds will be spent the same way as the governor uses.
Any questions? If not, then thank you all very much. Representative Murphy moved House File 1290. We recommended it pass and held over.
And included.
And held over for possible inclusion.
For inclusion.
Yes, for inclusion in the higher education and workforce omnibus bill. Representative Murphy, are you presenting this bill today?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
What happened to Representative Huntley?
He has the bill up in another committee, Mr. Chair. And I'm second office, so.
Okay, but he really wants this, then. It's just not that he's snubbing us or anything.
No, he's not. He's definitely not snubbing. And, Mr. Chair, I think we're very privileged because today we get two people to testify for the Duluth Children's Museum. And in my committee, we only had one person, but it was a very eloquent speech about this. Mr. Chair, do you remember where the Clyde Ironworks used to be, just off the freeway in old, in West End, now called Lincoln Park? And it is now the site, the old ironworks, Clyde Ironworks, is now the site of new development in the old building. And the Heritage Center is now open, and that is the new center for ice sheets for high school hockey and Little League hockey, or I guess they don't call it Little League, but you know, the hockey from
Pee-wee's
all the way up to
they still call me that.
To the high school. But
I'm going to make the team one of these years.
They have two sheets of ice there, and it is also at the Heritage Center, which was the old main building at Clyde Iron. They also have the site for the Boys and Girls Club in Duluth. Well, on this same land is another building, and the other building is going to be purchased for the Duluth Children's Museum, which is now in the depot. But it has outgrown the depot, and there's a picture of it right up there of what could be the Children's Museum at Clyde Park. And this is also going to be then the trailhead for the Munger Trail. That's going to move all the way to the West End rather than just in West Duluth. And so there's great things happening in this old demented land. We're not going to demolish the buildings. We're going to keep them and reuse them for the next century. And Mr. Garcia, Michael Garcia, is the director of the Children's Museum, and he has a lot more to tell you.
Mr. Garcia, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Riccobina, members of the committee. It's a privilege to be with you today. We'll be very brief today, but we wanted to share with you the project and the request under Bill 1290 for funding in the amount of $3 million for the adaptive reuse, as Representative Murphy has well outlined, in West Duluth. The desire of the Duluth Children's Museum to relocate is predicated on a space use study that was conducted by DSG, W Architects, and A&L Properties in Duluth. This study, conducted just over 2 years ago, reviewed the business model, looked at personnel, programs, exhibits, and collection and membership of the museum. I apologize. My name is Michael Garcia. I am the president and CEO of the Children's Museum, for the record. Going forward, what they looked at was the need for the Children's Museum and the amount of space it would take to best achieve the results of the Children's Museum based on membership and membership projections. We are currently in approximately 5,500 to 7,500 square feet in the depot. The building that is proposed to be the future home of the Duluth Children's Museum will have 28,500 square feet of adaptive reuse space. It is located, as Representative Murphy has well stated, in an area that was industrial but is becoming the hub of economic redevelopment in West Duluth / Lincoln Park. As stated, the Heritage Sports Center is there, the Boys and Girls Club is there. There will be a new middle school just 6 blocks from there near Wheeler Field. And under private construction is a hotel, a hospitality complex, a mixed-use performance venue, as well as the coffee shop and restaurants. I turned over to Mr. Jaworski, my colleague at the Children's Museum, to talk about the costs associated and share with you the concept design, which is on the board now.
Mr. Jaworski, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rich Jaworski. I'm the Director of Operations, Exhibits, and Collections at the Duluth Children's Museum. The concept design that was presented to us by DSGW, you're looking at the preliminary drawing of the front of the building, the same building that you saw in the first photograph that was presented. What follows is a summary of the estimated package cost with pre-development costs at $175,000, pre-design at $55,000, site acquisition cost at $750,000, furniture, fixtures, and equipment at $510,000, architect fees at $340,000, construction of $4,260,000, for a total package cost of a little over $6 million. The project's impact in this area, the museum's presence and our growth as a business contributes to the local economy by investing in local labor for both the short and the long term. This will create jobs both currently and jobs for staff to educate the youth in the Children's Museum. This is a mixed-use area with a lot of potential, so this will just add to the benefit of this to the community at large. And this will carry us through and continue us as a sustainable organization within the community. The investment is a good one. It's a good business model. This is not an original quote, but it's a common one. Children make up 30% of our society, but they do represent 100% of our future. We feel that an investment in that future is vital to increasing our economy, increasing our strength in the world, and increasing ourselves as a human race. We will be serving over 81,000 visitors. That's a conservative figure right now, based on the information that we can gather. Currently, it's hard to assess because we're in a mixed-use facility such as the depot. And we're committed to providing educational programming for well over 15,000 students annually, and that is based on previous figures for the kind of visitation that we've had to our museum at our location.
Okay, question, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to add that we expect that this would qualify for the federal stimulus money.
I'm not sure how it does, but we could turn this into a pre-college or something, and it might...
We expect that 15,000 students will need some kind of workforce training in the future, and they'll be able to do it on site.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what we can do, Representative Murphy, to accommodate it. Any questions, other questions, comments on the project? If not, thank you very much. We'll lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Representative Haas, House Bill 1850. Representative Haas moves House Bill 1850 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And Representative Haas, then you're going to move the...
Anybody.
Representative Haas, you're moving the DE3 amendment, the delete all amendment then?
Thank you very much.
Bill in the shape you want it?
Yes.
Representative Haas moves the DE3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. Today we're talking about a bill, but we're talking about just as much about teamwork, about good, proficient ways of doing things, of working together, of coming together, of gelling, of synergy, and those things that sometimes don't happen as naturally as we might think. In this proposal, in this bill, we're asking that the Workforce Council and the Cooperative Public Education, Adult Basic Education, come together with four local projects more aptly called collaboratives. And in those collaboratives, the collaboratives would be formed, first of all, the four collaboratives would be formed with geographical areas in mind, would be formed with gaps in mind where they may feel that there's a few holes. And in my favorite, one of those would have to be in an area where the Workforce Council is under the same roof as a Minsky facility. Now we have put them under the roof, and then we want to have this determined if they're actually integrated and how they could possibly better be integrated. Also in this bill, ABE is put adult basic education gains a membership on the workforce council. I think this is a great practice. I recall years ago in a couple past lives, I worked for a city, and one of the city administrators was complaining to the president of the council and saying, we don't have the entire cooperation and teamwork of all my department heads. And the president of the council said, why don't you put that on the agenda of the next department head meeting? He said, we don't have department head meetings. I think the council president found a difficulty. This is a best practice procedure, a reform procedure, and we have witnesses today going to give testimony of why they may think this is a good deal, why they may think it should be improved, why they may think it should not be done, but good practice should always be done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please identify yourself and go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Michael Murphy. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And I'm here to support this amended bill and want to draw your attention to a parallel project that's going on that I think converges with what Representative Hawes is hoping will be the goals here. In 2007, the state of Minnesota received a planning grant focused on enabling low-wage and low-skill adults to become better educated with the skills they needed in order to move on and breaking the cycle of poverty. A consensus emerged during that planning period that we needed to reform adult education and workforce development systems to serve low-wage, low-skill adults, as I mentioned, and in a way that will allow them to compete for jobs that pay enough to support a family. In 2008, we, meaning the state of Minnesota, received $500,000 from the Joyce Foundation of Chicago to develop something called the Minnesota Fast Track, TRAC. TRAC stands for Training Resources and Credentialing. And the idea, in a way, is to develop what we're calling stackable credentials that would allow somebody with a GED or with no other post-secondary education to move on in as seamless a way as possible. And with that original $500,000, what we were able to do is develop seven different incubators around the state looking at the kinds of support people would need in order to be successful in these training programs. We know that housing is an issue, we know that child care is an issue, and so on. And all so far we've received $520,000 from the Joyce Foundation and anticipate after August when we reapply that we'll be receiving another $500,000 that I think will do an awful lot of what Representative Hawes is talking about. The last point I'll mention is that as you know, there are six workforce centers located on our campuses now throughout the state and another two under consideration. I think what our goal would be with this bill is to look closely at whether this kind of integration that Representative Hawes is describing really does make a difference for those people who want to move on into post-secondary education. We don't know if co-location has the kind of impact we hope for, but think we will with this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann Olson. I'm the director of the Minnesota Workforce Counselor Association, and we work with the local providers of the employment and training programs in the workforce centers. We believe, obviously, that workforce development is a key economic development issue in our economy, particularly now as a lot of people are coming to us for employment and training services. And our goal is we appreciate Representative Hawes's efforts to make sure that the programs that all of us are providing are aligned very well and are kind of seamless to the people who are looking for our services, regardless of which one of our doors that they walk into. And so we appreciate the efforts that he's made to gather us at the local level to speak with our partners to make sure that we're doing that the best that we can by our clients. I think one thing to note is that across the state, these relationships are in kind of different states of development, and I think that our partners up here will agree with that. In some areas, as Mr. Murphy mentioned, they were actually co-located. In some areas, the workforce centers include adult basic education, but they're not co-located on the Minsky campuses. So really the goal of this proposal, as Representative Hawes has outlined, is that we get together and look at the different configurations and kind of try to learn from the different areas in the state of what works best and looks best to the clients that we're serving. So we appreciate his effort to help us do that.
Okay, any... Oh, we got somebody else. Though. How many more witnesses we got here?
Oh, they're just jumping up.
Well.
If they're positive, they're welcome.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, for the opportunity to speak briefly. My name is Tom Sipton-Heisen, and I chair the Legislative Committee for Literacy Minnesota, which is a statewide advocacy group for adult basic education services. And as many of you may have heard, we did have some strong concerns with the initial version of the bill, which would have transferred ADE into the away from the Department of Education and actually made us a part of MinSCU. This has been removed, which we're very appreciative of, and also think the entire bill is much improved over its original version. I'd like to briefly note that adult basic education serves between 75 and 80,000 adults each year. And in addition to workforce education, we provide family literacy, English language instruction, citizenship preparation, and other services. And we're a very flexible system, able to really turn on a dime. One example of this would be several years ago when we received many hundreds of new refugee arrivals from the WAC. And we were able very quickly to design and implement several dozen intensive functional work English classes to serve those clients. So we do want to be sure in this collaborative that we don't lose our flexibility, which is something we really value and are hoping that that will definitely continue. Much of our work does focus on providing pre-employment skill training for low-income, unemployed, or underemployed individuals. We also do provide services such as family literacy, however, which have a very strong effect on K-12 achievement. So much of what we do is not part of the workforce development system, while much of it is. We're very strongly committed to collaboratively working with workforce councils, VE, junior and technical colleges, employers, and others to meet the workforce training needs of Minnesotans. We already signed formal memorandums of understanding with workforce centers, MinSCU, and others. We're working with VE on 18 education training and collaborative projects to already explore and develop better ways of serving low-paid workers. And Mr. Murphy also discussed Fast Track, which we're a part of. We are very appreciative of the new language which would provide ADE membership on the local workforce boards. We think that's really very needed. And our hope is that this legislation will help address some of the barriers facing our students in the MinSCU and MFET systems. For instance, MinSCU does not have service to low-skill adults as their core mission, necessarily, and there are a lot of systematic impediments to our students entering the MinSCU system. For instance, academic tests can act as gatekeepers to the credit-bearing side of MinSCU, and therefore our low-skill adults often have been served in the continuing ed side of MinSCU, which does not enable them to earn credits towards a degree. And in the DEED system, there's often a tug between skills first and workforce for public assistance clients. So we're hoping through the collaborative that some of these issues can be dealt with. And in closing, we just have one other concern we would like to bring forward. Many of the system redesign tasks that are outlined in the bill will require resources for implementation. Just as one example, each of the different systems that would be part of these collaboratives has their own means of tracking data, their own data collection systems, their own software. If we're to be successful, there will have to be some common way of tracking clients and service delivery developed. I don't know what that will look like, but it will obviously take some resources. So we do look forward to working with the bill's authors to identify those resources, which might include federal stimulus, fast track, or other monies. So thank you very much.
Questions of Representative Hawes. Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, my first question was answered by the last testifier. The amendment is a big improvement. I was very concerned about the forced relocation of ABE programs, and I just want to make a brief remark to the whole issue of co-location. Our ABE program is already co-located with an early childhood program, community ed programs, and K-12 facilities, and there's some arguments in that direction, too, for the population of adults being served by that program. So I'm just cautious about what evidence there is for best practice indicating that all these programs should relocate at the post-secondary institution as opposed to other models of co-location. So it does sound like your projects may investigate that, and I would caution against too rapid a decision without more evidence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple of questions. Representative Haas, this is an intriguing idea, and I'm just curious, based on the last fellow's testimony, I'm guessing you're not going the route that I was hoping that you would go, but is it the goal that we would more utilize our college campuses and their job placement skills? Because I know from, you know, personal experience and, you know, other fellows, other people that I know that have gone to college, colleges usually use it as a tool to, or as a promotion point if they have a good job placement rate for their graduates. And I'm wondering if the goal is then to kind of have everything go to one spot, have it all done there, and we can maybe get some cost savings by combining our efforts. Is that the issue, or are you looking at...
Thank you. Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
In the original bill, that was really emphasized. But ABE is so comprehensive that that's a part of what they do, but it's only a part of what they do. If I was going to rename this bill, I would call it Darwin's, because it's gone through some real rapid changes in evolution. That can be a part of it, but it is not the major part. I think a major part really is when people sit down, these groups are going to sit down, and they're going to talk about a collaboration. There was a word called... Memorandum of Understanding, a MOU, you know, Memorandum of Understanding, and I think that's good. Duplication becomes very obvious as you start your collaboration. Awareness of what other people are doing becomes a real obvious. Now, should you have to force people to do that? I don't think so. But this also gives an opportunity for them to force, maybe, some other people that were not wanting to come to the table. Because they're listed out in this bill that says, you should be at the table. Somebody said, do you want that whole list? I said, I probably want twice that many. Because I really want people coming together and working as a team. This is really good business. This is a good business practice. And it's going slow. I think it might require some money in the future, and that's why you see a report to the legislature. If it does, if it requires law changes, if it requires money to come in, that would be part of a report back in February 15, 2011.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, you know, I maybe take a different approach than Representative Reinert as far as this goes. I would rather see you go more towards the angle of trying to earn some efficiencies off of how we do some of these things. And I also think that even as the bill as it is, I assume that you've asked the fiscal note already for this bill, even as it sits with its current language. And if you haven't, I would encourage you to do that. I assume, are we just laying this over, or what's the plan?
We're moving it.
We were going to lay it over, but Early Childhood wanted to see it. But my understanding, Representative Anderson, it doesn't have a fiscal note, but maybe Deed can clarify that. Deed representatives can clarify that. I think at one time there was some cost and controversy, but now it's kind of a touchy-feely, huggy type of bill, and it's moving. We're moving along. Rep. Ms. Batsley, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Lynn Batsley. I'm a legislative liaison at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. As the bill originally was drafted, it would have had a cost to it. As it's written now, we do not believe that there will be a cost.
Okay, right. Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Batsley? If not, Representative Detmer and then Murphy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I guess that kind of answers my question regarding the fiscal note, but just looking at the six different organizations coming together, I can't believe that there wouldn't be a fiscal note, but that said.
Representative Detmer, when somebody opposes something, it costs money, and then yeah. When the agency wants something, it doesn't cost any money. It's amazing. I've seen bills go from $10 million to zero and zero to $10 million. The snap of a finger.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, I understand now why I got the letters about ABE, but does the community, the ABE community, know about this bill?
Everybody is, I think everybody is on board with this bill. I think there's peace in the valley. We have a minimum of four, and I think there's already six different workforce centers that are saying, pick me.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hodson, has Representative Riley said pick me?
No, but I don't know if she's controlling one of the workforce centers.
So it would be just for those workforce centers?
This would be a grouping of... in the collaborative effort, that's why we're going through K to 12.
We're going that early childhood because
early
ABE
childhood
is that early
for ABE. It would be a public education. It would be workforce centers. It would be ABE. It would be housing authorities. Those would be the. Yeah, thank you. Community action agencies.
Just one more question that I don't remember your name.
Tom.
Do you think that ABE will have more attention under this collaborative than they received before?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy? I don't know. My hope is that our concern is always towards how can we provide the best services to people who need our services. And I think I can definitely say we support the pilot project nature of in the bill of trying this and seeing how it works. I don't think we could wholeheartedly say, yes, we think this is the answer yet, because we don't know. My understanding is this is a trial to see if this would work better. And I do think that the concerns raised by ABE professionals in the field have been heard and have been addressed in this new version of the bill. And I think I would delay till next year saying, yes, this is a better system for us to work in to serve Minnesotans, or no, it's not a better system.
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, I think that if there's a chance that adults' basic education can be given more attention and more money, maybe, or at least more people paying attention to the need for adults' basic education and for the services to the people that it provides, I think it's worth a try.
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Murphy, I would also think that when we think of ABE from 10 years ago and what it is today and what it's going to be 5 years from now, I think we better be evolving it with this group.
Okay. Well, Representative Haas, you said that you think everybody's in the boat. I think they still have their life jackets strapped on, though, just in case. So with that, we're going to send this bill. Then do you want to... change your motion to re-refer it to early childhood.
Thank you.
Representative Haas moves then House File 1850 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the early childhood.
Thank you, committee members. I appreciate your
Did
question.
You have a question?
No, I'm just wondering. Sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if you need to go to finance and then to early childhood or however that works.
I think we may have to. It came directly to us from us to finance, so... We'll refer it back up to a full finance committee. They can re-refer it to. If it came right to us? Oh, then I can send it directly to early childhood. And then we should probably, I'll talk to the chair and she can send it back here to us after they review it. Okay? All of the favorites think of probably saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. Representative Erdahl. Is Representative Erdahl here?
Right.
Oh, there he is. Representative Erdahl moves, or excuse me, Representative Erdahl has moved. Representative Welty moves that House File 908 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Higher Ed and Workforce Development Bill. Representative Erdahl, welcome to the committee. It's not often. You usually got some pork bill when you come here, but this is kind of...
Just a great bill for the whole state of Minnesota.
Go ahead.
Welcome the opportunity to be here. I do have
expert.
Well, I have an expert with me, but I have a few small amendments that I'd like to offer and then have someone move them, please.
What would you like to do here? Do you have a written out, or are these oral amendments?
These are oral. Do you want me to read them?
Go ahead and read them, and Ms. Novak can record them and read them back. We'll have someone move them for you.
Okay, thank you. Page 1, line 14, delete plan and insert agreement. Page 3, line 20, delete contract and insert agreement. Page 3, line 22, delete employer and insert employee. And the final one, page 3, line 29, delete plan and insert agreement.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll offer those amendments.
Representative Nornis moves those amendments. Ms. Novak, is everybody okay to after we read them? Everybody's okay with those? Okay. That's fine. And Representative Nornis moves those, I believe, 4 oral amendments. All those in favor, signify. Representative Reiner?
This is just a small point, but I'm looking at the repealer. The repealer language applies to the shared work plan as it currently exists, so I don't think you want to change the word agreement, plan to agreement there, because it's the current legislation that's being referred to there, but not. Ms. Novak, is that correct or not?
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Newman would be our expert on
Mr.
Report.
Chair and Representative Reiner, you are correct, but the terminology has been changed in this bill, and the department wants the terminology to be consistent. If you look in line 3.28, it applies to a shared work agreement approved before August 2nd.
Okay, excuse me, Mr. Chair. So that means the current language would be expunged, and so they're referring to the old program under new language.
Correct.
Okay. As long as it's clear, that's fine.
Okay. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Representative Bruno.
Thank you, and those, again, were just to try to be consistent. This bill is about the shared workers program. This is modeled after a 1994 federal language. It is been working with Mr. Nelson and Deed in putting this together. I will say that this bill passed this morning in the Senate without amendments, so it's through the Senate. The Shared Workers Program allows workers to share hours or days with other workers, thus allowing an employer who might otherwise be forced to lay off workers to keep more workers employed at fewer hours. The program is through Deed and currently is through 1 year. A 6-month extension from the program or hiatus from the program is mandatory once the year is completed. Now, in prosperous economic times, this works out pretty well, but in a recession, it can lead to more and more layoffs. This bill would drop the 6-month hiatus provision, keeping workers employed and with benefits. There are about, and Mr. Nelson can correct me if I'm wrong, but I've heard that there were about 2,000 companies in Minnesota that are currently under this program. It helps workers, it helps employers, and the sooner that we can get this passed, I think the better, because workers are being laid off.
Okay.
As we're waiting to do this.
Mr. Nelson, what is the estimated cost, or is there none because this is currently going on, or is there a little bit of a cost because you're just going to let them go an extra?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. Mr. Chairman, to your question, we don't believe there's a fiscal cost to this bill because the employer has to certify they're otherwise going to lay someone off. And in lieu of laying off one person, they would then reduce the hours for a group of employees. And this bill brings a lot more flexibility into the law than the current law. And I can go through all the flexibility that Representative Virtle explained. One of the problems which the current law requires a hiatus, and that is removed. This would apply to could apply to salaried workers. Can apply to if you have less than 5 employees, and just brings a lot more flexibility into the program.
Okay. Well, given that, then maybe we'll just amend that motion and refer this right to the House floor, Representative Riddle. Mr. Nelson, just a quick question for you regarding one of my situations up north, and that is at one of the taconite plants, the workers voluntarily reduced their work week so everybody could work and people wouldn't get laid off to 32 hours, which is a 20%, I guess, cut in pay. So if the employer is does nothing to enter into a work plan, which this employer doesn't seem to want to do for whatever reason, I think they're worried about their experience rating. Does it affect their experience rating, and can workers qualify without the employer participating?
Mr. Chairman, to your question, this does require the employer to agree, because the employer has to do a number of certifications, and then it is
does it cost the contract.
And yes, this would affect the employer's experience rating, the same as if they laid someone off. This simply spreads the, if you want to call it, pain across the workers rather than falling on an individual, but the employer still has to pay the cost of reduced hours. They otherwise would receive a savings off this, and know the employer would pay the same cost as if they laid someone off.
Well, in my particular situation, I should talk about it, because the employer is calling some but not all people back to work and claiming that they're really not on a 4-day week, and so they don't get any experience rating. Representative Thornton.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to just throw my weight behind it. I like the change. I think I have some employers that have been using the program under the current language, and it really works well to allow a company to continue to operate pretty effectively, again, without having to retrain also employees as things get better. So it keeps the experienced worker on the job and doesn't affect their home budget. Great deal.
Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chairman, can I respond?
No. Representative Detmer. You can't ask for Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the testifier, is this a volunteer thing for the employees, or is this something the employer is going to do? Is this something the employees have to agree upon?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Detmer, the employees would not have to agree to this, the same as a layoff. They wouldn't have to agree to a layoff. It could be forced on them. But, Mr. Chairman, to your point, the current law requires that no reduced hours occur until after a plan has been approved. This would allow a plan to be approved even after the employer has reduced the hours. Now, the unemployment benefits would not be paid retroactively, but the employer in your situation could say, okay, now I'll agree to the plan, and we could start then paying partial unemployment benefits. So that was one of the reasons for this draft, was to handle that situation in Northern.
Well, I'm hoping they will agree. I'll have to talk to them again. Any other questions? Representative Erdahl, nod to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a brief reply. I've had in the past, the other three times at committees, hearing this bill, representative from Dura Supreme, a cabinet maker outside of Howard Lake, addressed this issue, and they believe they're keeping 100 workers working that they otherwise would have had to lay off without this program. And this past weekend, I toured Towmaster Company in Litchfield that makes large trailers, and their CEO said that this is the best program that they've got going for them right now in light of the economy.
Representative Obermuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably a question for Mr. Nelson, but it's lines 3.15 to 3.17. It's a 60-day basically hiatus, I suppose, from the program if you cancel the program. I understand why we don't want employers canceling these programs, but I don't understand the reason for a 60-day wait when you might need to cut back further and still keep some employees working rather than laying everybody off. Could you explain why that's there?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, an employer could write a request an agreement for as short as 2 months And the theory is that you don't want them to say, okay, I'll make it for a year, but I'll terminate it, but then I'll just be able to go right back into a new plan. You could otherwise turn what would otherwise be a minimum of 2 months into a minimum of a week. You could turn around and switch it almost weekly, which would be impossible to administer. So you're saying if an employer signs an agreement, they're held to that agreement, but they can cancel. But if they cancel, then they can't have a new one for 60 days. So you're in effect saying don't just enter into these agreements willy-nilly and then don't terminate them willy-nilly. But you can terminate them, but if you do, there's a consequence. You can't just be moving back and forth, otherwise that's why it's written the way it is.
Thank you. Okay. Any further questions? If not, I think we have to go to finance because I see your bill was referred from finance. So, Representative Norris renews his motion.
Welty.
Okay. That House File 908 be recommended passed and we refer to finance. All those in favor signify as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. Representative Rudolph? Thank you. Representative Conan, 1281. Representative Detmer moves House File 1281 be recommended to pass. And Representative Conan, are we, your intention for us to roll this into our omnibus bill? Or?
Mr. Chairman, that would be fine.
And we recommend to pass and held over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee, Representative Conan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. This bill is a fairly short one. In current law, there's a requirement that the U of M and MinSCU develop course equivalency guides for use between higher education institutions. What this bill does is require a course, course equivalency and awarding of credit for formal military courses and occupational training. And Mr. Chairman, that's what the bill does.
And Representative Conan, my understanding is neither the MinSCU nor university system is opposed to the bill and they don't think it costs them any money?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Are there any questions then? Representative Detmer?
Chairman, just in comment, you know, that our veterans come out with some great training in their military service and they've taken a lot of different courses, a lot of different MOSs, military occupational specialties, and I think we're recognizing that a lot of these can be used for college credit, so this is a good bill.
Okay, no further questions. Thank you, Representative Conan. I hope you treat me as kindly in front of your committee if I come.
I'll remember this, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Representative Welty moves House File 1446 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus higher education and workforce development finance. So, Representative Welty, welcome, and you've hammered all of this out in the Ag Committee and everywhere else.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1446 is the Ag Special legislation. This went through the Agriculture Committee and now came forward as an Ag Finance Committee, and now it's here before you in front of the Higher Education Committee. House File 1446 is legislation that actually is somewhat unique. 2 years ago, we expanded the Ag Special. The Ag Special used to be just a straight line item, and it said the University of Minnesota Ag Special, and then it had a dollar amount. Well, 2 years ago, we expanded it from the simple line item to have language contained in it to give more guidance to the University of Minnesota for the experiment stations, for the extension service, and then there's also money that goes to the College of Agriculture, Natural Resources, the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resources, Sciences. And so the money is split between those three different entities. But just to go through the bill quickly, I won't take a lot of time on this since we had a full vetting of this in the Agriculture Committee. The new items that have been included in the language, essentially we want to put more emphasis on having the university convene agricultural advisory groups and then transfer the information and the research and the best practices to the producers, the agriculture producers throughout the state. We ask them to focus more on vegetable crop research, soil, ground, and surface water conservation. developing plant varieties that use nutrients more efficiently, plants and seed development that is targeted to the three biomes in the state of Minnesota. We also have asked them to put more emphasis in the dairy industry and developing dairy co-products, developing animal agriculture that is capable of sustainably feeding the world, also consumer food safety education and outreach. We added in language, and we are asking the University of Minnesota to analyze livestock facility siting and regulatory models from other states and countries. We are simply asking them to bring us information. We are not asking them to recommend anything in that area. We've also added language in, and this comes from the Ag Committee. There's been research released from the University of Minnesota about ethanol, not all of it in favor of ethanol, and so the Agriculture Committee wants some guidance and some research to be done on areas where we believe that there will be some positive results shown in the ethanol industry, and that's looking at the water use trends compared to other industries and activities in the state, carbon balance of ethanol production, the effect of ethanol blending requirements on transportation fuel prices, and the economic impact of ethanol production and use, including employment, economic output, and state and local tax revenues as a measure. And finally, we asked them to implement a dairy producer continuing education program. This isn't currently being done, but we've heard from the dairy producers throughout the state that they would like continuing education programs, and then also the scoping of a new dairy research and teaching facility in the state of Minnesota. After the initial expansion of the Ag Special, we asked the University of Minnesota to come back and provide us with an update. They recently did that, and they went line by line through the items that we had specified in our legislation, and they gave us their results of what they've been able to obtain after the past 2 years. I can tell you in the area of organics, we specifically wrote that into the legislation 2 years ago, and we in the state of Minnesota have now an organics research facility which could be top in the nation. We have also looked at many of the other items, some of the language that I didn't go through here, and they are producing favorable results. They are responding to our needs and our requests, and I can tell you that between the Agriculture Committee now and the University of Minnesota, we have a great partnership and working relationship. I think it's the expansion of this language has brought that partnership about. And I would just request that we include this legislation in this year's higher education omnibus bill. And with that, I'll take questions at this time.
Okay, Representative Welty, I think the committee and I personally have been giving you quite a bit of leeway to work with this in the ag, only because I trust my roommate, Representative Junkie, who has an agriculture degree. But I know that Representative Bly has, also worked very hard on a number of the organic proposals. And I know there kind of was some tug and pull here. I think it was the summer or fall or so after the last, the 2007 bill. Has that stuff kind of been ironed out then?
Mr. Chair,
it would be farmers, my friends, that I found them,
Mr. Chair, as far as I'm aware, it was. There are individuals here that could testify on behalf of the university if we need further input, but I believe it was resolved, and the legislative intent and what we passed was clear.
And Representative Welty, before I call on Representative Bly and his amendment, I know Representative Murphy and I, we kind of have a soft spot in our heart for the NRI research facility, too. They've done a lot of work on biofuels and that, and I noticed you've emphasized it in here is that your intent that they work with the NRI on a lot of those issues that have been developed over many years up there in Duluth Research Lab.
Mr. Chair,
that's located in Hermantown.
We did not specifically write the NRI into this language, but we do have an emphasis on biofuel research.
Well, perhaps Representative Murphy and I can talk to you about that as we put the bill together. Representative Bly, you got an amendment?
Yes, I do. It's the A5 amendment. And first, let me say that there are a lot of very good things in this bill, and I would say that I have continued efforts to try to work with the university on the organic things, and I am pretty satisfied that they're moving in the right direction, and I think what the Wealthy reports is accurate. I do continue to sort of keep my eye on it and want to make sure it's moving forward. But to the amendment, Ms. Novak helped me understand that there's an error in the way the amendment is worded, and I'm looking at page 2, line 18, instead of line 20, to page 2, line 19. Delete everything after for and before the. And you did refer to this issue when you were explaining the bill, the Wealthy, and what I'm concerned about, I guess, is the livestock study or analysis that's recommended. There was a study, the generic environmental impact statement, done in 1999. It cost the state over $1 million, and I guess my concern is that is that really the best use of those dollars to do that kind of study? If perhaps that, you know, I would have more comfort with it if I knew that it was perhaps focused at more smaller farms, or maybe what they're doing in Vermont, or some of those issues, rather than just another study about livestock siting, which, from my understanding, was pretty thoroughly covered in a not so long ago study.
Representative Wealthy, comments on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, members, I want to be very clear on this. We are asking the University of Minnesota to look at other states and other countries to come back with information as far as what is done in those other states and other countries. We are not asking the university for any recommendations. This issue was vetted. This amendment came forward in the Agriculture Committee, and the members of the Agriculture Committee voted down this amendment. So I would respectfully request that the members vote down this amendment as well. The study that was done before that was brought out in the Agriculture Committee as well. We discussed that, and this is different from that.
Questions to the amendment? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Without having the appropriate version of the bill before us, I don't think that we could amend it, because the actual amendment is to the first committee engrossment. What we have in our package today is the original bill as introduced.
Representative Anderson, I think the differences are just slightly minimal. We had asked for the correct the amendment to be drafted to the correct engrossment, and evidently it didn't happen again. So maybe we could have Ms. Novak tell us if there's some real concern here. Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chair, the first engrossment of House File 1446 adds an additional factor on page 2. And on the version that we have, it would be between lines 2.9 and 2.10, it would add a 12th factor, which is programs to meet the research and outreach needs of sustainable and organic livestock and crop farmers. And those additional two lines would push everything down on this page by two lines and make the amendment fit the first engrossment, but that's the only change.
So, Representative Anderson, is that okay then, that now that you know the difference, that we can...
Well, it's up to you, Mr. Chair, but I just caution you that I don't know if this will make the bill right. It might cause you problems down the road,
well,
but I'm trying to say.
Then what we will do to get the bill in the proper order is we will offer that Representative Welke moves that online after outreach on line 2.9 that we add the number 12 and the language as follows.
Mr. Chair, that would be programs to meet the research and outreach needs of sustainable and organic livestock and crop farmers. And there's an additional change that has to be made on line 8, delete and on line 9, delete the period, insert a semicolon, and the word and then the two bills.
Representative Anderson. Okay. Representative Welke makes that motion, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, that motion prevails. And now is the, now we still understand the amendment. And you've heard the discussion on the amendment. Would Representative Bly and Welke prefer to arm wrestle over this in one of their offices so we don't have to make any decision here today? Representative Bly, would you?
I would be happy to talk with Representative Welke in his office about this. And I, you know, I would
I'm
be
kind
more
of leaning towards the hippie farmers myself, Representative Welke. So, I, mean, you know.
I think if language could be clarified that this would be, you know, about what the study would be like and it would be truly different than the earlier study, that would be a lot more comfortable for me. So if we could talk about that, I appreciate it.
When we are putting the full bill together, Representative Welke, by that time you guys can have worked this out. Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, Representative Welke. What is the current appropriation for this item?
52.
Mr. Chair, Representative Briner, the appropriation in this bill is the same appropriation when it left 2 years ago. So we are asking for no decrease or no increase. We're asking for the same amount for this purpose. Mr. Chair, just a clarification, is Representative Bly going to withdraw his amendment? Then we're going to work this out?
Yeah, Representative Bly is going to withdraw his amendment. Representative Anderson, just one more question. Representative Anderson.
One more question. Does this come out of the higher ed target, sir?
Right. Okay. It's right in the university's target, and it's typically been done this way. I think we did strengthen it up a little 2 years ago and be more specific. And so this is what we did, and there's new language that the Ag Committee has worked out just to make sure that the university does what the higher ed committee upon recommendations from the Ag Committee wants done. And is the Senate, is there similar language coming out of the Ag Committee over there? Okay. Thank you, Representative Welke. Representative Nornes, and is he here?
Norton.
Oh, excuse me. Norton. I'm sorry.
We do get each other's
numbers. I know. I get Haas, and Haas. Haas, Haas, and Haas all mixed up, too.
I guess would be required.
You know, if you had an itch or something on the end of your name, I could pronounce it properly, you guys. Representative Norton moves House File 552. He recommended the pass and held over for possible inclusion.
I do, Mr. Chair, and I would like, if you would be so kind as to allow me a technical amendment on line 1.5, which is the title.
Mm-hmm.
If we could please strike University of Minnesota and Mayo Foundation and add the correct title, which is Minnesota Partnership for Biotechnology and Medical Genomics.
Representative Norton makes that motion. Any questions about it? Comments? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. That motion prevails. Representative Norton.
Thank you very much. Just quickly, this is renewing or reaffirming the amount that the governor and the legislature put in the base in the past. And what is new about this, so lines 1.7 to 1.14 are what's currently in the base and what I believe the governor has not cut, so it should be what the governor is agreeable to. But line 1.15 to 1.18 is new language, and what this does is assure that the University of Minnesota will not again unilaterally cut the genomics partnership funding without first notifying the higher ed finance chairs in both the House and the Senate. And I will say this, the university, due to some fussing, has made some internal changes, and so they are doing some internal work so that doesn't happen again as well. So I think between these two, we'll make certain that the decisions of the legislature remain intact.
Any questions on the bill? If not, then we'll lay the bill over for possible inclusion. And members, then,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer, would you move the minutes of the March 31st meeting?
Mr. Chairman, I so do.
Okay, and all those favors? Any additions or corrections?
There's actually a typo in the last page.
We got it. Oh, good. We got to change the minutes.
It's very important to me to make sure we're precise on these. This is on the second, I'm sorry, the third paragraph after the House File 1963 reference there. It says United States Code, and then the word should be title. So I would make that.
Representative Overmuller offers that amendment. And we've heard that. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And all those opposed, and that motion prevails. And then I think we'll just adopt the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Members, you have a letter from Deed in the packet regarding the Winkler bill that we heard the other day.
And given the concerns there, I'm going to take that bill off the table, and I'm going to re-refer it to Representative Mullery's Civil Justice Committee, and they can do with it as they wish. Is that okay, Representative Anderson? You kind of agree with that?
I apologize, Mr. Chair. I have not read this letter. What does it say exactly here?
Basically, the deed has concerns with the bill as it's currently drafted, and they opposed it. And so, you know, I'm going to send it to Representative Mullery's committee, and they can do with it as they will.
Right.
Which doesn't mean it might not show up somewhere, I guess.
that happens here.
Yeah. Okay, so then, Representative Murphy, would you move that we refer that bill to House Bill 1963 to, is it Civil Justice Policy? Civil Law Policy Committee.
I will, Mr.
Or whatever it is. Okay.
It is my motion.
That's the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. Members, we've got another hearing Tuesday that we think we're going to hopefully get everything on, but we've got floor sessions, and so we may have to have our meeting like at 4 o'clock or something. I don't know. I've got a meeting too, but I will have to play it by ear. We're hoping session won't go too long, but maybe you guys can control that, and then we can... Yeah, we're doing the UI bill?
Yeah. What day?
On Tuesday. So, with that, members, everybody have a nice weekend, and we'll see you Tuesday, and meeting adjourned.